Jacob DeGrom is back on the mound. Can he be vintage Jacob DeGrom? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, March 3rd. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. Send all your friends, by the way, firstpitchpodcast.com or First Pitch, wherever you get your podcasts. And Troy, I want to get to our division previews for moving to the NL Central this week. Please, everybody, contain your enthusiasm. I want to get to some interesting news about a potential Hall of Famer, guy who's not in there now and has passed away. I want to get to Justin Verlander doing some new stuff and some of the changes at Camden Yards. But first, Jacob DeGrom did his first live at-bats of spring, his spring debut. He threw 25 pitches on Saturday in a live batting practice. He faced Jock Peterson and Kevin Pillar, so two outfielders, both also former Braves. Fun fact there. 25 pitches, 14 for strikes, struck out two, walked one in eight simulated at-bats. His first game performance is Friday. He's going to make his debut in Cactus League play against the Rockies. And manager Bruce Bochy has said, quote, he came out of it fine. He looked good. He looked like Jacob, the stuff and everything. And that he'll get the innings he needs to be ready to pitch that first week. So here is my question to you. And those of you listening, he has not heard this question yet. This is a surprise. If I could give you the ability to wave a magic wand and have one of these two players fully healthy all season, would you take Jacob DeGrom or Mike Trout?
Ooh, that's a good question. I like that question. I think that I would take Mike Trout just because he is more impactful for the Angels, and he plays, if he was fully healthy all season, he'd be playing every day as opposed to Jacob DeGrom, who would be playing in 32 games at most all season. And that's not to discredit what Jacob DeGrom can do. Jacob DeGrom can still be impactful over those 32 games. It's just,
yeah,
I've tried to see Mike Trout play twice and he's gotten injured prior to my wife and I going to the game both times. And so it's just, it's been pretty bad luck for us on the Mike Trout front. But yeah, that is a good question. But I think that I would have to go with Mike Trout.
Yeah, it's as much as I want it to be Mike Trout, I kind of feel like maybe it might be Jacob DeGrom, simply because you feel like there's more opportunities for Trout to do it. He signed for like another, what, 5-6 years or something like that.
That's a good point.
DeGrom is looking for his first healthy season since 2020. He made all starts that year, all 12 starts that year, 68 innings. But he hasn't thrown more than 100 innings since 2019, and he's made only 35 starts in the past four seasons. 2023, he made six starts before going down with Tommy John, and then he made six starts at the end of the year last year. It wasn't a ton of innings either, but he looked pretty much like vintage Jacob DeGrom. I think this is something I'm a little torn on Jacob DeGrom from a Hall of Fame perspective, right? Because he has the peak. You know, he is legitimately one of the greatest pitchers of this generation from a pure dominance and stuff perspective. He's got two Cy Young wins, a Rookie of the Year. He has an additional third place finish, a seventh, an eighth, and a ninth. MVP votes, four-time All-Star, and his 5.41 strikeouts per walk issued is the all-time career record in baseball. All-time. Not active players. All-time career record in the sport. He is one of the most electrifying guys. He had a two-year span in 2018 and 19. I don't think people realize the back-to-back Cy Young years. He finished those 2 years combined with an ERA of 2.05 on 64 games with 524 strikeouts in 421 innings and a combined 16.7 war in 2 years. But he doesn't have the longevity. Like, he doesn't. I mean, he has 218 career starts. He has 1,300 and change career innings. And from a performance perspective, he's been good enough to be, he's been an all-star talent, but he doesn't have the all, I'm sorry, a Hall of Fame talent, but he doesn't have the Hall of Fame track record. And I don't know if he has a 30 start season this year, puts up an ERA of 2 and change, is that enough to get him into the Hall of Fame conversation? Or is he still one of those guys where he's been really good, he just hasn't done it enough to be in the Hall?
Yeah, for me personally, I think I've made my stance on durability pretty clear over the life of this podcast. For Jacob deGrom, I think that it's 100% the case, if he did not have the injury issues throughout his career, that he would be a surefire lock for a first ballot Hall of Fame nomination. But for me, it's just, it's like you said, it's that he doesn't really have that durability. And especially over the past few years, that stat you gave, since 2021, he's made 35 starts and he's 38 years old this year. And that's one of my favorite weird stats in baseball right now, is that he has
fewer. He's 36 this year.
36, my bad.
You're right. Yeah. Still old. Yeah. But not. Yeah.
He's still older. His age is still a higher number than the amount of starts he's made over the last four seasons combined.
There you go. Yeah. And part of that's because he debuted at age 26, right? Like, he was an infielder at Stetson, I think it was Stetson. Yeah. He was like a shortstop that converted to the mound. So,
if he didn't have those injuries throughout his career, he'd be a surefire lock for the Hall of Fame. For me, I would need two or three more, at least full seasons of workload of being a top tier caliber pitcher to put him in the to make him a surefire lock for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Some of the typical measurement systems that they use for the Hall of Fame, career war, 7 year peak war, things like that. He's just behind a lot of other, like, he's behind the average Hall of Fame pitcher in a lot of those. I mean, career war, the average pitcher in the Hall of Fame has 72.9. He's got 45.2, right? 7 year peak, the average Hall of Famer has a 7 year peak of 49.7 war. He's at 39.8. And it's just one of those, because he never really had a 7 year stretch of dominance. He had 18, 19, 20, 21, and then the injury started, right? I mean, he had 17, 18, 19, 20, and then he lost time in 2020, and then the injuries hit after 2021. So there's your issue right there. From Jacob deGrom to another guy who we do expect to eventually make the Hall of Fame, Justin Verlander has unveiled a new pitch. His curveball, well, not a new pitch. His curveball was his main secondary pitch last year, 21% usage, but batters hit 340 against it, right? It wasn't that great. And so in a matchup on the backfields, in a simulated game on Saturday afternoon, a bunch of Giants prospects had to face Justin Verlander with a new curveball that still had the vertical movement, but added a bunch of, in his words, quote, with added sweep, a bunch of horizontal movement. Are you in or out on a 42-year-old pitcher, but like significantly changing one of his main pitches at this point in his career?
Well, he struggled a lot last year, and a lot of that was due to injuries, but a lot of it was also just not having the same amount of stuff that he's had in the years past. And so he had a rough year last year with the Astros. I think that it could be good for him. I'm in on it if it'll help Justin Verlander have one more season of at least goodness. It doesn't even have to be greatness. If he could have at least one more season of goodness, then I'm in for it, especially in that ballpark in San Francisco, because it's hard for guys to hit there. And if Justin Verlander is even good, he can still have one more season of greatness just with his own personal output being just good.
Yeah. And on that note, he's less than 100 strikeouts away from 3,500 for his career.
Wow.
And so that would be a fun little milestone for him to be able to hit. Is 3,500 strikeouts for his career. Teammate Robbie Ray, by the way, new changeup. So excited about that. Want to see what he does. He was injured for a while, obviously, and you know, had Tommy John and all that and came back and was traded. A lot of stuff going on there. From guys who are questionable for the Hall of Fame or a future lock, to a guy that's currently being debated for the Hall of Fame, Commissioner Rob Manfred is evaluating a proposal from the family of Pete Rose to remove him from MLB's ineligible list. The Baseball Hall of Fame has traditionally not allowed people who were on the ineligible list to be voted on for the Hall of Fame. So while Major League Baseball does not put people in the Hall of Fame, they would need to remove him from the ineligible list if so that the Hall of Fame could then put his candidacy to the voters. And the family's petition, they asked MLB to do that so that he can be considered for the Hall of Fame. Reminder here, he was put on the ineligible list in August of 1989 after an investigation when he was determined that when he was manager of the Cincinnati Reds, he gambled on 52 Reds games. I don't believe he bet on them to lose any of the games, but he bet on baseball on his own team that he was managing. Are you in or out on not Rose in the Hall of Fame? Are you in or out on taking him off the ineligible list now that he is deceased? As his family argues, it should work because obviously if he's not alive, there's no reason to keep him banned from the sport.
So this is a loaded topic all the way around, but yes.
Please, people, don't be mad at us for the way that we discuss this. Okay, like there's people going to be mad on both sides. Strong right. feelings on this,
and I think we would be doing a disservice if we didn't bring up the allegations against him for what he did with a minor during his time on this earth, and yeah. I think that with that being the case, Major League Baseball is currently undergoing pretty much an exact same situation with Wander Franco of the Tampa Bay Rays. And I think that if Pete Rose is taken off the ineligibility list, then why is Wander Franco not allowed to be playing baseball right now? Because it is literally the exact same thing, except while it was
there's more on there's a lot more on Rose than just I mean the allegations thing, like they have that in common, but like Rose also went to prison for 5 months for tax evasion in like 1990, and then the betting on baseball thing, he officially was banned for betting on baseball, but a lot of people have argued he should not be reinstated because of some of the other things as well, like the continued statutory issues with the minor and all of that.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, what Pete Rose did for as far as baseball strictly in a vacuum, he is one of the best baseball players to ever play the game as far as baseball strictly in a vacuum. And it's hard to have the Baseball Hall of Fame without one of its best players. But at the same time, there's a lot of off the field stuff that happened, and you can't really take that out of the equation because of how high profile all of the off the field stuff was and how illegal and just morally wrong the off the field stuff was. As far as tax evasion goes, that I don't really care whether that's included in the it's bad, don't do tax evasion, but I don't care if that's included in the discussion.
We are not a pro tax evasion podcast here, folks.
I paid my taxes, people. But the other stuff, it's just tough all the way around. If all that stuff didn't happen and it was just gambling on baseball, then I'd say, yeah, put him in the Hall of Fame. But because of it being other stuff involved, it's tough. I think leaving him out would probably be the best course of action.
He does have 4 records. We all talk about him as the hit king, right? 4,256. He also leads baseball all time in games, plate appearances, and at-bats. You go to Baseball Reference, there's four gold bars on his player stat page. But like, here's my thing on this. So there has been a prior precedent to the idea that the ineligible list is for while a player is living. I want to say it was 2020. ESPN put out a thing about Commissioner Manfred's belief is that the ineligible list, the banned list, whatever, goes away when a player passes away. MLB kind of informally considers that over. So I legitimately do think they may eventually take him off of the ineligible list because there's nobody left to be ineligible, right? Like, you can't be part of the game anymore. At the same time, there is currently Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. He has not been inducted. There is a whole exhibit, a whole section dedicated to Pete Rose, talking about his hits record, the team. I mean, they have like his shoes, the scorecard, the jersey, you know, the bats, the helmet that he wore when he passed Ty Cobb, like all of this stuff. And I do think that you can kind of split the difference here, right? MLB can be consistent with that reported belief that he no longer needs to be banned from baseball because he's no longer with us. But I don't necessarily, if you're going to invoke the morality clause on other players, I don't understand how you can't invoke it for Pete Rose. And we're never going to get a resolution to this. No matter what we say on this podcast, people are not going to be happy. And ultimately, I don't know if they'll ever put him on a standard ballot or if he would go in front of one of the ERA committees. But I don't envy the commissioner. I don't envy the Hall of Fame in this because there's very strong feelings on both sides. If it's me personally, I am fine with him having an exhibit that talks about what he accomplished. And the exhibit also discusses why he is not in the Hall of Fame. I am okay with that because his baseball achievements are recognized while also acknowledging that compared to most baseball players, he was a significantly flawed person who committed acts against the game that resulted in him not being eligible for induction. So like it's a tough place to be. Nobody's going to be happy with it, but that's kind of how I feel about it at the moment.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I'm right there with you on that. It's a tough place to be. And yeah, I also don't envy Rob Manfred. He's made a lot of tough decisions throughout his tenure as commissioner. And this one is going to rank pretty highly up there as one of the toughest. And it's also kind of hard for him, you know, because this decision is coming up in the last stretch of his tenure. He's only got a few years left and then he's out. And so it's crazy. But, and at the same time,
he pushes this to the very end. The last thing he does is he walks out the door.
Right. But it's also even, I think that even if he does take him off the ineligible list, I doubt that writers will vote in Pete Rose, honestly, if he does get on a ballot in the ERA committee or just a regular ballot. I don't see a lot of writers voting for him to be in the Hall of Fame because of the off the field stuff.
I think the demographic shifts that we've seen in the Hall of Fame eligible voters recently, a lot of younger voters guys who didn't watch Pete Rose growing up. Like, I didn't watch Pete Rose growing up.
Me neither.
I feel like a lot of those younger voters are less inclined to overlook the transgressions of a guy simply because they grew up watching him. And so I do think, let's say in 3 years he hits the ballot, I don't think he'd get enough support to be inducted. And I do think that's simply because of the new class of voters who are more open to statistics, who are more open to analytics, and who are more, they don't hold those certain milestones as sacred or guys they watched as sacred. They're more objective in their evaluations. Real quick, before we get to the division preview thing here, Camden Yards they used to have, like, they moved the wall back a couple years ago. It became known as Baltimore. And terrible for right-handed hitters. They are moving it back in somewhere between the various points, 9 to 20 feet closer to the plate, and shorter by 3 to 6 feet. It's not as extreme as it was when they first pushed it out. It was baseball's most homer-friendly park for righties in 2021. It became the 22nd most friendly to righties in 2024 and the nightmare scenario for Isak Paredes. right now, it's going to land kind of in the middle. Are you in or out on teams changing the dimensions of their ballpark based on or making drastic changes to the dimensions of their ballpark?
Drastic? No, I think I was out on the whole Baltimore thing because of how drastic it was, and I'm kind of glad that they're moving it back to and not moving it back to where it was per se, yeah. But just kind of finding a happy medium. Like, I'm fine with finding a happy medium. Make the ballpark play pretty neutral across the board, and I'm fine with that. You see that in a lot of the newer ballparks these days. They're pretty fairly neutral across the board as far as hitters and pitchers go, and I think that's kind of what Baltimore is trying to do there at Camden Yards with their wall in left field. So
I think you're splitting the difference pretty well. Yeah. If they had the 2021 fence last year, they would have had 50 additional home runs.
Wow.
Yeah. But with the new proposed fence that we'll see this year, they would have had 29 additional home runs. So, like, it is an improvement, but it's not so drastic. And I do think that that's probably the way to do it. It's honestly just wild to me how baseball does not really have rules on this stuff. Like, it is, the infield is within inches, 60 feet, 6 inches to the mound, right? Like, the distance to the base, all of that is within inches. There is minimums for your walls, and places like Fenway are grandfathered in because they were built before the rules were put in place. But there are zero rules on how high your fences need to be, how far out your fences have to be, any of that. And it's just wild to me that baseball is the sport that is so hung up on statistics the most and yet has the most variation in fields. Can you imagine if you got an extra 5 yards in the end zone in New England, but not in New Orleans? Like, just how differently the game would play if you had an extra depth in the end zone to drop a pass in a bucket or something. It's just wild to me that baseball is so different. Now, some people will say that they like that. Like, that's appealing to them. It's funny to me. That's all. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. And yeah, there are definitely arguments on both sides of that coin eventually adding those rules and for not, because without those rules right now, we still have the ability to talk about, like, how would Bobby Witt Jr. do at a ballpark like Yankee Stadium or Citizens Bank Park for his career, instead of Kauffman Stadium, where balls go to die in the outfield. And it's those conversations can't be had now. And if there were rules like that, we couldn't have those.
Yeah. All right. So our divisional previews continuing with the NL Central this week. I guess we'll talk about the Pirates. One of the organizations that really doesn't do much of anything. By my count, I think they did sign multiple guys, right? So they made a trade for Spencer Horwitz. He had wrist surgery. He's going to be out for a little while. And so looking at the lineup right now, no idea who plays first base. I think Fangraphs has Derek Hall, an NRI from Philly, in here as the first baseman to open the season until Horwitz is back. But import Tommy Pham is in left, which means Nudelarm Brian Reynolds moves over to right, flanking converted shortstop, now center fielder, O'Neill Cruz. And that means Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is your starting shortstop.
KF.
Yeah. Joey Bart's resurgence after he was let go by San Francisco has been interesting. He's projected to be the starting catcher. Andy Rodriguez backing him up. 33-year-old veteran Adam Frazier is your utility man off the bench. You have infielder Jared Triolo and outfielder Joshua Palacios with him. Thoughts on this position player group? Because honestly, for me, incredibly underwhelming.
Yeah, I've talked about ad nauseum how optimistic Fangraphs projection system is as I've dove into it more this offseason than I have in years past. And even their optimistic projection system has only three players finishing with a WRC plus above 100. and that's not good. But yeah, this entire team as a whole, it's the Pittsburgh Paul Skeens and the boys, and the offense falls into the category of the boys. It's not a good offense, and they're not going to do much offensively. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch Andrew McCutchen and, you know, trot out there with a walker every day. But other than that, there's nothing really to talk about here. It's just, it exists.
Yeah. The rotation is legitimately fun. You mentioned Paul Skeens, obviously. Jared Jones was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. They've still got Mitch Keller. They signed Andrew Heaney from the Texas Rangers. Bailey Falter as a five. I don't hate the rotation. I really don't hate the rotation. They've got a lot of fun pitchers there. You look in the minors, a lot of other fun pitching prospects. Bubba Chandler, Thomas Harrington, Sean Sullivan. You know, they've got a Braxton Ashcraft, Johan Oviedo, Mike Burrows. Like, they've got a bunch of arms. And the top of the rotation is actually really, really good. And Skeens and Jones has the potential to be. It's just, there's no way these dudes can do it by themselves. And I think that's the main kind of issue you have here with this pitching staff is, as Seattle has learned, just a pitching staff and one or two dynamic hitters is not enough to make you a contender.
Yeah, 100%. This pitching staff, it is a solid pitching staff. It's the rotation is no, there's no argument about it. It is the strength, especially with Paul Skeens at the front, who added two new pitches this offseason, and they are,
you know, nasty. That's a guy who needed new pitches.
Right. And that two seamer is nasty, man. But they're going to be holding a lot of teams to under four runs. It's just their offense is not going to be able to score more than that.
A lot of Paul Skeens goes seven innings, allows, one run on three hits in a 1-0 Pirates loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. What year was that where Jacob DeGrom got like 1.75 runs of support all season from the Mets? One of his Cy Young years or something. But he had a season like that where the Mets just could not score. He averaged like two runs a game, and the Mets could not score, and he lost a bunch of decisions like 2-1. I want to say one of those Cy Young years, he actually won the Cy Young with a losing record because the team couldn't score.
In 2018, he won the Cy Young with a 10-9 record and a 1.7 ERA.
That had to be it. That had to be the year I'm thinking of. I'm going to go pull his game log from that year, but I want to say he got like no run support. But either way, yeah. Like, the point is, it's just they did not do a lot to help him. They to help this rotation. They really didn't. And the bullpen's okay. David Bednar is a decent closer. They've got a couple pieces, Colin Holderman, Carmen Mulawski. Like, I like some of these pieces, but it's just, it doesn't matter. If you don't score runs, it doesn't matter how good your pitching staff is. And that's kind of where I am with this. And I think the hardest part, too, I don't see anywhere where they get better. They don't really have a ton of impact performers coming up through the minors. I'm looking through fan graphs here at some of like all of the best pitching prospects, or all of the best prospects are pitchers. It's kind of like you look at the Braves organization. You've got one or two position players who are exciting. And then it's a bunch of pitching prospects. And the difference in the Braves and the Pirates is the Braves don't need those position players because they have Ronald Acuña Jr. and Matt Olson and Austin Riley and Michael Harris and all these guys. Whereas the Pirates are starting Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at shortstop and, you know, Nick Gonzalez at second base. Like, that's the difference. And Derek Hall at first. Like, that's the difference in these organizations. And if you could just launch this owner into the sun and find somebody who would actually spend money, the Pirates could be decent, but they're going to finish fifth in the division unless literally every single thing breaks right on this roster and everything breaks wrong for the entire rest of the division. And I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It does all boil down to their insistence on not spending money and not going out and bringing in big name guys. Because with a rotation like this, if you add one or two guys to the offense, you're gonna especially in the National League Central. I mean, the Cubs are pretty far and away above everybody else right now with what they've done this offseason. But you would still be up there. You would be contending for a 500 record or better.
Instead of signing Tommy Pham, can you imagine if they had signed Anthony Santander to play right field and left Brian Reynolds and left? Like, can you imagine how much better the offense would be with Anthony Santander blasting homers, right? Can you imagine if they had actually gone and gotten a shortstop versus giving it over to IKF, who they acquired at the trade deadline last year, and then moved O'Neill Cruz off the position? Like, a million first basemen move teams, and the one that they got was Spencer Horwitz. And, like, he's not bad, but he's not good. And so it's just – they're just fine to sit there and take their revenue-sharing money and go 470, and that's it. The odds on Fangraphs of them winning the division are somehow 10.9%. Too high?
Yeah, that's way too high. That is way too
18.9% chance of making the playoffs. A 1 in 5 shot of making the playoffs. Feels a little high there, too.
I think optimistic is too low of a word for that. But it's just I think it all boils down to also that they have what is widely believed to be one of the best ballparks in Major League Baseball. Like, everyone you ever hear talk about, you ever hear talk about ballparks talks about how gorgeous PNC Park is, and people will go to it for that reason, even if they're not Pirates fans, because, you know, they want to go to PNC Park. They want to go to one of the best ballparks in baseball. And so the owner's like, I ain't got to spend money because I've got people coming into my ballpark left and right, and I'm making a killer profit. So it's just dumb all the way around. And they're one of those teams that fall into the category of those that need to spend money, because it's fun when the Pirates are good. And especially, you know, for me, I'm a Phillies guy, which, spoiler alert, there's no more poop game this year. The NBC Sports.
They changed the score bug. Yeah.
Yep. They changed the score book. No more poop game, but it's fun when the Pirates are good, and they're just not ever. So they haven't been good in what feels like over a decade, and it's they won't spend money.
Yeah, Auburn. Baseball is better when the Pirates are competitive. I wore my Dave Parker shirt yesterday. Like, there's a history in Pittsburgh of them being competitive and being good, and I think baseball is better when they're good, and they're not, and it's a shame. That'll do it for First Pitch for Monday, March 3rd. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.